Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last month, when California Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon put the brakes on California's single-payer healthcare bill, SB 562, he called it woefully incomplete, and it served as a major blow to vocal supporters of the legislation, like the California Nurses Association. So what happened? Well, independent journalist David Diane wrote a piece for The Intercept called California Single-Payer Organizers Are Deceiving Their Supporters. It's Time to Stop. And his main argument is that single-payer has to go to the voters. He writes that you cannot do the funding without help from the voters because of California's fatal addiction to its perverse form of direct democracy. David Diane is an independent journalist, and he's author of the book Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. Hi, David. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rose. How are you?
Good, thank you. Well, the California Nurses Association responded to Dave Diane's piece. That's one of the largest groups pushing for single payer, and they said that many of his assumptions about the bill are wrong. We invited the nurses to join us, but they declined. We are also joined today by Dr. Paul Song, board-certified radiation oncologist. Dr. Song is a healthcare reform activist, a national board member of Physicians for a National Health Program, and co-chair for the Campaign for a Healthy California. Hi, Dr. Song. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So what we want to do on the show today is really talk about the facts, because a lot of people were so angry when Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon decided to put the brakes on the bill. So, Dr. Song, first off, this passed the Senate, and then a couple weeks later, Speaker Rendon put the brakes on it. How do you explain this?
You know, I'm part of the Campaign for Healthy California, but I'm a guest today speaking really independent for myself. I would just have to say that, I think that the bill that had passed the Senate was always the start of, there were a lot of things that were missing, financing mechanisms, and a lot of the issues that David had correctly pointed out that were missing, but I think he and I have different conclusions on that. But I think what I would just say, just to cut to the chase, is that you just saw the legislature and the governor come together to pass a cap and trade bill that had a lot of problems with it, that required a ballot initiative being placed to sort of finalize that. And so sort of some of the arguments that were placed against SB 562 didn't seem to apply to cap and trade. And really, I think it comes down to this. We've had, legislators who said they've been in favor of single payer for a long time. Speaker Rendon has been one that has said that he's been in favor of in principle. But obviously the political will and appetite has never been there, because if there really was a desire on the speaker's part, on the part of the governor and such, they would all get together just like they did cap and trade and really fight to put something together, even if it meant going to the ballot to tackle some of the issues that David had pointed out, such as the school funding and the GAN amendment. So I think that that's really what I want to just get back down to, is that we know that a lot of times legislation does take time to really ruminate through discussion, through real careful policy decisions of all the issues and concerns that the speaker had. But I really thought that if he truly had any appetite to move this forward, that he could have had those hearings in the assembly. He could have allowed for people to introduce amendments, for people to really talk about limitations, raise concerns, raise everything from the reliance on federal funding to all the things that have been raised. But to simply just table it without having a discussion, that I think is what really got a lot of activists and people who really are desperately harmed by the current healthcare system upset. And I think that's really what it gets down to, is I think that Senator Lara, who allowed the bill to proceed and was the champion of this, he would be the first to say that it was not complete, but he always, I think, was under the impression, as well as the nurses and everyone else, that once it got to the assembly, that there would be at least some good faith effort on the assembly part to see what we could do to make this happen. But unfortunately, that was never even allowed to happen, and that's where I think the disappointment and outrage lies.
Speaker Rendon said, "As someone who has long been a supporter of single payer, I'm encouraged by the conversation begun by Senate Bill 562. However, the bill that was sent to the Assembly is woefully incomplete." He said that even senators who voted for SB 562 noted there are potentially fatal flaws in the bill, including the fact that it does not address many serious issues such as financing. He said in light of this, he's decided that SB 562 will remain in the Assembly Rules Committee until further notice. David, Diane, what does that mean, until further notice? In some articles I've read that it will be tabled until the end of the year.
Well, what Speaker Rendon did is something that is done on a lot of bills, particularly big legislative items, which is turn them into two-year processes. In fact, the only two times that a single-payer bill has actually passed the state legislature, they were made into two-year bills, and they took the time to actually go through all of the steps to get them into tip-top shape. I'm going to maybe disappoint your producers by mostly agreeing with Dr. Song that, you know, I think the cap-and-trade experience is instructive. And what it showed is that there was no real roadblock for SB 562 if the state Senate and all of the top leaders in the legislature were interested in moving things forward. Because what was done on the cap-and-trade bill? The cap-and-trade bill failed an assembly vote earlier this year. And what was done is they took an unrelated bill, because there's supposed to be a deadline where you're not allowed to pass legislation after May. New legislation should not be able to be passed after May. But what did they do with cap and trade? They took an unrelated bill and they did a thing called gut and amend, where they took out all the words of that bill and put in this new cap and trade bill, and then passed it first through the Senate and then back to the Assembly. There is no reason why that couldn't have been done with SB 562. If Speaker Rendon decided to shelve it for the year, if there were supposedly all these amendments that senators had devised and agreed to, there is no reason why they couldn't have gotten amended an assembly bill that came over, put in these amendments, and made this quote-unquote woefully incomplete bill complete, and bounced it back to the assembly and given Speaker Rendon something more to think about. In other words, pressuring him to actually pass the bill. The fact that this wasn't done or wasn't even considered, and not even by the bill sponsors seen as something that was a viable option, shows, I feel, the lack of seriousness along the entire legislature toward this effort. It wasn't just Speaker Rendon who was the problem here. It was everybody. Nobody wanted to pass this bill. Nobody wanted to take the steps necessary. And sadly, the bill sponsor, who I'm sad is not here right now, didn't want to pressure with the types of procedures that could have been done to force the hands of the legislature. They just wanted to go after one guy because I guess that was easier from the standpoint of activism.
David, have you interviewed Speaker Rendon or any other Democrats to ask them these questions about why they decided to table this?
Well, I mean, I think Speaker Rendon has been perfectly clear as why he wants to table it, but I think, and I think the subtext is perfectly clear. The State Assembly is a far more conservative body than the state Senate. The state Assembly is the one who initially stopped the cap and trade bill on the same day that Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and every activist in California was saying that it's time now to defy Trump they moved in the direction of Trump by stopping our bid to mitigate the worst effects of climate change. The state assembly rejected a bill to end money bail in California. Time and again, there is a group of moderates, I would call conservative Democrats, within the state assembly that is in no way interested in moving forward on these very key progressive issues. And Speaker Rendon, as the leader of that caucus, didn't want them to have to take that vote. So he calls this a shelving when he's trying to, you know, push it into oblivion. And my issues with the Nurses Association and the Senate sponsors are mainly tactical. They are that Speaker Rendon was given an easy out by being given a bill that had virtually nothing of substance attached to it, and was just more of a political document to say that we support single payer. I feel like the Senate sponsors were more interested in getting the glory of progressive activists for possible career advancement than actually doing something on this very important bill that, as Dr. Song explains, is very needed. So my issues are around tactics and strategy.
David Diane is an independent journalist. He's got a piece in The Intercept about single payer, and it is called California Single Payer Organizers Are Deceiving Their Supporters. It's Time to Stop. He says that single payer has to go to voters. He says you cannot do the funding without help from the voters because of California's fatal addiction to its perverse form of direct democracy. And we'll talk about specifics in just a couple of minutes. We did invite the California Nurses Association to join us. They responded to David's piece saying that many of his assumptions about the bill are wrong, but they declined our invitation. We're also joined by Dr. Paul Song, a board-certified radiation oncologist, a member of the Physicians for a National Health Program, and co-chair for the Campaign for a Healthy California. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions about single payer, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. What we want to do on today's show is really get the facts out there. This is such an important issue. So if you have any questions about what happened behind the scenes, why this was tabled, and how this would actually work in a state like California, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can tweet at Your Call Radio, or you can leave a comment on our website. Dr. Song, let's talk a little bit about how much this would cost, because there were lots of different information out. There's lots of different information out there. And I wanted to bring to your attention, I'm sure you're aware of this, a piece by Robert Pollan, professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and he's done a lot of analysis on single payer. And he wrote in the LA Times that California will spend $370 billion on health care this year. Assuming the state's existing system stayed intact, the cost of extending coverage to all California residents, including the nearly 15 million who are currently uninsured or underinsured, would increase health care spending by about 10% to roughly $400 billion. And that $400 billion number is the one that we've seen all over the place. Robert Pollan writes that that's not the full story. He says that enacting a single-payer system would yield considerable savings overall by lowering administrative costs, controlling the prices of pharmaceuticals and fees for doctors and hospitals, and expanding preventive care. He says, we find that Healthy California could ultimately result in savings of about 18%, bringing health care spending to $331 billion, or 8% less than the current $370 billion. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I think it's very important for listeners and everyone to realize that when you hear the number $400 billion being thrown out there, that it's not as if a single-payer plan is going from we're not spending $0 to now spending $400 billion. And I think that's what's been very disingenuous by some people that have been using that figure. They make it seem like we're not spending anything at all right now, when in reality, even the most conservative estimates estimate that we'll spend as a state about $370 billion. So healthcare is complicated, and it is very expensive, and that's really the whole point of this. And unless we do something it's going to consume in more and more of our state GDP. As long as the federal government doesn't do anything, it's going to continue to consume more and more of our federal national GDP. And in, on top of that, as it's been pointed out, we have nearly 3 million people that are currently uninsured here in the state of California. We have nearly an additional 12 million people who are underinsured, meaning that if they were to get sick, they probably would not be able to afford the care because of copays, deductibles, things of that nature. So there is a real economic problem, not only for us as a state, but individually. The other thing I want to point out is State Controller Betty Yee just last week said that one of the greatest fiscal challenges facing California is the mounting cost of providing health care benefits to the public sector workers, and that California currently had, at this point, a nearly $80 billion unfunded health care retiree liability. So, you know, when people throw out big numbers, people have to realize we as a state are already spending that. And the idea is, how can we maximize the amount of money that we spend as a state to provide more comprehensive care to every single resident, to provide better care, to avoid people being underinsured or going bankrupt strictly because they got sick? And that's really at the genesis of what a single-payer plan does. Now, any real healthcare expert, regardless of ideology, will tell you that single-payer actually is the most cost-effective, it's the most efficient system around. A matter of fact, the reason that there's such high consolidation of private insurers, right? You have all of these mergers that were being proposed that may be now resurrected under the Trump administration, where you have eventually you could end up with maybe three big insurers insuring nearly, you know, 85% of the entire private sector people get private insurance in the nation. Why are they doing that? They see the same benefits. So one way or another, we're moving towards a single-payer plan, whether or not it's a Medicare for All or whether or not it's a California single-payer plan or whether or not it's going to be everyone has Kaiser or everyone has United Healthcare. We are moving to that. And the question will be, do you want your single-payer healthcare system to be run by a for-profit entity that only makes money by denying care and passes on those savings to their shareholders instead of trying to keep everyone's premiums low and increasing coverage for everyone? Or do you want a more robust, equitable, moral healthcare system where everyone has a decent access, the same access, high-quality care, and more benefits? And that's really where this whole fight is going, and that's really the whole purpose of that. But I'm glad you pointed out that $400 billion price tag, because that's been thrown out there to scare people away as if right now we're not spending anything. And all of a sudden, we're going to be spending $400 billion out of the blue. No, I mean, if you look at it, a single-payer plan would cause us to spend somewhere between $30 to $50 billion more. And at the initially, but then with all of the economies of scale, as you mentioned, administrative efficiencies, reducing drug prices, we would be able to really bring that savings down. Finally, I'll just say this. When United Healthcare or when Kaiser uses its market share to negotiate drug prices, discounts for their enrollees, that's considered to be good business practice or good free market business practice. But God forbid when the government tries to do that, you know, Medicare is forbid from negotiating drug prices, or when, let's say, a single-payer plan here in the state of California tried to do that, oh, that's government interference. And that's really what I think listeners are starting to wake up to. Why is it that the private sector can do that to maximize their profits, but we as a state or we as a people can't develop our own health care plan that allows us to keep those savings and take care of all of our neighbors and brothers and sisters instead of just, you know, passing on the profits to, you know, these basically corporations that only make money by denying care.
We're going to take callers in just a minute, but one more question about cost, because this is very important. David, Robert Pollan in this LA Times piece says that the state of California would still need to raise about $106 billion a year to cover the cost of replacing private insurance. And he proposes two new taxes, a gross receipts tax of 2.3% on businesses with an exemption for the first $2 million in revenue, and then another one, the state could institute a sales tax increase of about 2.3%. 5%, and this could be offset for low-income families with a 2% income tax credit. So can you also tell us a little bit more about cost, because this is a really important piece of this bill.
Absolutely. The way to think about this, then, is that every individual in California already, if they have private insurance, they pay a premium. If they have a copay, they pay a copay. If they have a deductible, they pay all the spending up to that deductible. They pay for whatever they need to pay for to acquire health care, like total state health care spending. That's what's being replaced, because the bill that's being considered, SB 562, would replace all of that. There would be no copays, there would be no deductibles, there would be no premium charges. It would be paid through the tax system. So the idea that it would be raising taxes is not really, I think, the proper comparison here. The proper comparison is how much were you paying for your health care before and how much will you be paying now? And if you do that comparison, it's according to the poll and numbers, which I'm not arguing with, it would be a lower number. You would be paying less for your health care. So all of that being equal, single payer sounds like a good deal. The only problem and the issue that I added in my piece at The Intercept is that we have a very silly budgeting straitjacket that we've placed on ourselves for the last close to 30 years that says all state spending, roughly 40 to 50% of it, has to go to education. So if you raise the $100 billion, like Robert Poland says in his op-ed, you would have to raise $200 billion, because $100 billion would have to go over to education if it is seen as a general fund revenue increase. And it is in the Senate analysis of SB 562 in the committee that was chaired by Ricardo Lara, who is the author of SB 562. So the Nurses Association says they might have a way around this. I mean, first they said they're talking to people. I asked them to show their work. They wouldn't. Then they said that nobody's opinion matters except for the Legislative Council on a determination of whether you can exempt this revenue from Prop 98, which is the formula, this budget straitjacket that I just talked about. I talked to the Legislative Council's office. They said that they could look at language and make a determination right now. They haven't done so. So at the moment, you would have to do one of two things. You would either have to raise twice as much money as you need for the system, or you would have to put a measure on the ballot saying this revenue that we're getting for administering the single payer system is exempt from that budget straitjacket, that formula, that Prop 98, which is why I said essentially you're going to have to go to the ballot to get this done. Mm. So it's tied up in cost and financing because of the silly way that we have constrained ourselves with the way the budget works in the state of California.
David, I'm guessing a lot of people have never heard of Proposition 98. And in your Intercept piece, you report that it was passed in 1988. Proposition 98 requires, as you said, that about 40% of all general fund revenues must go to K-12 education. You also report that Prop 98 was a reaction to the notorious Prop 13, which sharply limited state property taxes. And it was intended to ensure that education received its fair share of funding, but as you say, it created a budgetary straitjacket that affects almost anything that costs the state of California money.
That's right. And in 1988, there was not this anticipation that you would be putting the health care system of the state of California on the budget. So it just didn't see this unintended consequence that it makes it difficult when you want to add new programs in the state of California. Now, there's a way around that, but the way around that is at the ballot box, and that makes this a longer, more entrenched fight that's going to, take hundreds of millions of dollars probably to counteract the massive spending that would be put on by the health industry, whether it's doctors or hospitals or insurance companies, who would see an existential threat to their existence and way of life if a single payer system were to come to pass. So when you think about it that way, if this is going to be a long fight, the strategy becomes different. You need to prepare for that. You need to build a very broad coalition. You need to start raising the money. You need to start thinking about how you're going to pitch this to voters. And all of that stuff is immaterial of whether Anthony Rendon lets you vote on the bill this year or in 4 months. It doesn't matter if it's a long fight that ultimately ends at the ballot box.
Can I just say one
sure.
thing about that? I mean, I agree a large part, but I think, again, if you look at the cap and trade, what did they write into this recent agreement was there is going to have to be a ballot initiative next year that is addressing some of the concerns that were raised through this legislation. And
sure.
and that's, I think, gets to the, I think Dave and I are not that far apart. What I'm saying is that if there's no political will in the state assembly to even try to move this forward, with or without a ballot initiative, I mean, if there was, let's say they said, okay, we want to do it, and then we ran into the issues of Prop 98, if we ran into issues of all the other things that were mentioned, just like the assembly and the governor and the Senate got together to agree to put an initiative on the ballot to address those things that tied into the cap and trade, they could have again done something similar to address the Prop 98.
Yeah,
but the difference is there was no political will, as David pointed out, for them to do that now. So I mean that's what I'm saying. I think that, you know, what the criticism that is leveled towards the activist community for being upset at the speaker or others for not pushing this forward really is born out of this. If you can do it for cap and trade, why can't you do it for healthcare? Oh, maybe you don't care about healthcare.
Well,
and that's really where this comes from.
But let me just clarify. I absolutely agree if there is no political will. And that's not just true of Anthony Rendon. It's true of the state Senate, who made no effort to amend this bill in the process that they had available to them. It's true of the governor, who has been clearly opposed to cap and trade, and particularly on the cost issue, and has been public about it. My problem was an expectation created by the activist process that there was one person in all of California that was holding back the barrier to acquiring single payer, and it was his name was Anthony Rendon. That's just simply not the case,
right.
And that's what I reacted to.
David Dayan is an independent journalist. You can read his piece at The Intercept. It's called California Single Payer Organizers Are Deceiving Their Supporters. It's Time to Stop. As he's just been saying, his main argument is that the single payer has to go to the voters because of funding issues. The California Nurses Association, one of the largest groups pushing for single payer, responded to David's piece, saying that many of his assumptions about the bill are wrong. We invited the CNA to join us, but they declined. We're also joined today by Dr. Paul Song. He's a board member of Physicians for a National Health Program and co-chair with the Campaign for a Healthy California. This is Your Call. Today we're talking about single payer, and we'll take your calls right after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, our lines are filled, but when somebody finishes their talk, you can call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. If you get too much of a busy signal, you can always send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be talking about shocking images of Syrian refugees who died in Lebanese military custody, allegedly during or after torture. They're receiving widespread coverage. We'll be talking about who's telling their stories. The majority of refugees are living in Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan. And then we'll also talk about a New Republic investigation exposing three decades of Donald Trump's business ties to Russian mobsters and oligarchs. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're talking about single payer in California with David Dayan, independent journalist. He wrote a piece about this for The Intercept. We're also joined by Dr. Paul Song, a board-certified radiation oncologist, co-chair of the Campaign for a Healthy California. We reached out to the California Nurses Association, but they could not join us. Before we get to calls, David, you're both talking about political will and Sacramento. And I wanted to ask you about the power of the health insurance and pharmaceutical lobbyists in Sacramento.
Well, it's significant. It's not all necessarily all-encompassing. There are actually some bills this year on pharmaceutical transparency. There's a bill that I actually testified on around pharmacy benefit managers. These are the middlemen that actually negotiate discounts with pharmaceutical companies on behalf of insurance plans, and they are these middlemen that skim lots of money off the top and sometimes don't even tell the health plans about the discounts that they've negotiated. So there's a bill that has passed the assembly, the not necessarily very progressive assembly. It's already passed and passed in the state Senate committee so far, that would force these plans to be more transparent about the discounts that they're actually receiving. However, that said, the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, very powerful, not just in Sacramento, but just as a general political force nationally. The thing that I think is changing and that's going to change this argument overall is the sea change in public opinion over the government's proper role in the healthcare system. There was a poll that just came out in the last couple days from the Associated Press finding that 62% of Americans now agree that the federal government has a responsibility to provide health coverage to everybody. That's up 10 points just from March, you know, so just in the last 4 months, as this talk of changing and overhauling the Affordable Care Act and putting in this destructive system has been at a fever pitch, more people are seeing that the government has a responsibility here. And ultimately, that people power is the only thing that's going to be available to overcome the power of the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry. It's going to be a very heavy lift. And by the way, the hospital industry has to be put in here, too, because the reason why health insurance is a problem right now is it's unaffordable, and hospitals benefit greatly from marking up the cost of treatments, and our doctors are paid at levels that are far above doctors all around the world, and ultimately the provider industry is going to be an industry you're going to have to fight in order to get quality and affordable health coverage for all.
Well, we have full lines. Let's go to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Song. I wanted to comment on David Dayan's discussion of the problems with the comparison of the cost to consumers, customers, patients, what have you, before and after, and how it would clearly be less after the bill passed. And I wanted to say that I went up to the hearings in Sacramento when it was at the Health Committee hearing, and I was in favor of 562. The people making the arguments for it did what I thought was a dynamite job, not just because they were preaching to me, but that all of the people who spoke in opposition really made kind of empty, vapid, I thought, even if I opposed, if they made a good argument, it would be worth listening to. They really didn't say anything of substance. And that my feeling was that there was, although it might have been vague and not fleshed out, indication of where the funding would come from in this bill, that it would come from increased payroll taxes over a certain amount. It was like a huge amount of money. If you were making hundreds of thousands of dollars, there would be a minor increase in the payroll tax, and there would be some diversion of monies that currently go to government-sponsored health care programs, be it Medi-Cal or other programs, and that it was granted pretty loose and it wasn't very specific. My sense is that, and from what I've heard, and I'm not usually pretty paranoid, is when I was very surprised that the bill got pulled, because I had such a positive experience when I was at the Senate Health Committee hearing, is that from what I heard, you all can correct me if I'm wrong, is that Speaker Rendon gets a boatload of money from the insurance industry and from the pharmaceutical companies, and that that was his primary vote of motivation for not bringing it up for a bill and for a vote. And I kind of get tired because I've witnessed this happen from way back when it passed both chambers of the California Senate, California government, and Schwarzenegger vetoed it twice.
Right.
And then when the Speaker would not bring it up for fear of President Obama taking, like we were offending Obamacare, but not by favoring it. And it seems like every time it comes close, it gets the legs knocked out from under it. And so I'm just wondering, and I do agree that I think the ballot initiative is probably the next step for activists who want to get this passed.
Well, thank you for that, Ruthann. Let's take a few more calls, and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Ed in Menlo Park. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for this very important subject. I'm wondering if your panel is familiar with this alternate universe of workers' comp health care. It's a very unpleasant business that I've been through, and I would suggest that maybe the case for universal health care would be strengthened if workplace injuries were also to be included as part of that. And for the employers, there would be the inducement of having a lower workers' comp insurance rate for them to pay. And so I don't know why these two universes need to exist. They don't need to. And why should it matter where you incur the injury?
Well, thank you. That's interesting. I mean, Ed, you bring up a good point, because there's so many basic questions about what would change with single payer. Dr. Song, how would workman's comp change under a single payer bill?
Well, again, part of the amount of money that businesses are paying is if somebody is hurt on the job, they're paying for their health care, for their rehabilitation, for their time out, all of that. And certainly a big portion of that is healthcare costs. And so if you no longer had to worry that everyone was insured, and if you got hurt in your job or you didn't get hurt in your job, that you still would have access to quality care, that technically should bring down the cost of for businesses on that end. On the other end, I will also just say, from a doctor's standpoint, medical malpractice would actually go down, because again, when you are paying high claims, most of that is actually going for, particularly because in our state where we have a cap on pain and suffering, for future medical costs. But if all the future medical costs are therefore paid for through a single payer system and guaranteed with no maximum caps and things of that nature, again, malpractice rates would come down, as they are in Canada. The other thing I would say for doctors is, you know, the average doctor is spending somewhere between $80,000 now to maybe $90,000 a year per doctor, their offices are, working strictly to get pre-authorization, to fight denials and things of that nature. And a large part of that would go away as well. So there are a lot of simplicities that would actually happen, and I think the caller raises an excellent point about that, that perhaps the movement has not paid as much attention to touting what the potential benefit of single payer would be on that particular workman's comp area.
In the LA Times piece, Robert Pollan, who's a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, writes that most businesses in California would see a drop in spending. Small firms that have been providing health insurance for their workers will see costs fall by 22% as a share of payroll. That's a huge percentage. And then for medium-sized firms, costs will fall by about 6.8% and 13.4% as a share of payroll. Even most large firms will see costs fall by an average of 0.6% and 5% of payroll. So that's a really important one. Thank you for calling in, Ed.
Can I just add one thing?
Sure.
That prior to the bailout, General Motors was actually spending more on health care for their employees and retirees than they were on steel to build cars.
Wow.
So this is a major, major liability for corporations. I think instead of money going for R&D, for capital improvements, it's now being consumed more and more by health care. So think of how much more that would allow for greater innovation in our state for businesses. And that's something that I think businesses need to move beyond the Chamber of Commerce ideology and really look at how this could really improve their day-to-day operations.
All right, thank you, Ed. Let's go next to Craig in Palo Alto. Hi, Craig.
Hello. A couple of questions and comments. One is, I'm not sure how bad things are going to have to get in the state of California before an initiative is started to try and get single payer. The reason I say that is because I agree with your guess. After calling several of my elected officials, it's clear the Democrats have no desire to pass this. I mean, I talked to Berman's office and Senator Hill down here where I live, and I couldn't believe the explanations I was given. In principle, they support it, but they gave the same arguments that you people are presenting, which is it's so vague, and we don't know how we can reconcile this. There's so many things left out. And I thought initially it might be Rendon, but he does have a considerable amount of power, obviously, because he can block this. But I think there's just the bad actors. I mean, if doctors were willing to support this kind of thing, I think it could happen. But I think it is going to have to go to initiative. I just don't know how that's going to happen, because I don't think the Democrats are going to push this, and I just don't know if there's enough support by the people of California to try and get this going through an initiative. Now, I mind you one thing. This did fail, I think, once in an initiative.
It did.
Years ago.
Yes, it got killed.
1992. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And I know the person who was behind this, a man by the name of Ishu Lagapa, who used to be a teacher at UCSF, a medical doctor. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be an uphill battle, because there's going to be a lot of money spent against, even if there is the will on the part of the voters.
Well, your call is connected to Ruth Ann's, Craig. And Dr. Song, we've had single-payer doctors on before who said that the Democrats voted for single-payer under Schwarzenegger because they knew that he was going to veto it. And so they were safe doing that. So what are your thoughts about this? I mean, people are angry. They want this. You saw how the nurses responded when Rendon put the brakes on it with these graphics of a bear with a knife in his back with Rendon's name on it. And then there's a lot of articles going around about Rendon's connections and the money that he's getting from the industry. So what are your thoughts?
Well, so when I graduated from medical school in 1991, if you talked about single payer, everyone thought you were a socialist or a communist, and it just wasn't even feasible, because at that point, people were pretty satisfied with their health care. I think what's happened now is you're seeing a sea change. They've given the Affordable Care Act some time to work, but people are still running into all of the issues of narrow networks, of not being able to afford their copays, deductibles, of constantly fighting with insurance companies that are denying. And I think that's where people are starting to experience a trauma from the healthcare system on a day-to-day basis, either themselves or through a family member or a loved one. So that's where I think people are paying more attention to healthcare than they ever were. With regard to legislators being beholden to the insurance industry or the pharmaceutical industry, I think we need to even take it one step further. The Affordable Care Act, while it did do a tremendous amount of good, there were 3,300 registered healthcare lobbyists for the 535 members of Congress, spending more than $1.2 million a day. In total, more was spent than the Bush-Kerry election, and that's why the Affordable Care Act, in large parts, looked like it was written by the private insurance industry and pharmaceutical industry. There's no insurance rate regulation. There's no mechanism to take into account obscene drug pricing. There prevented Medicare from, negotiating drug prices. All of these things that have happened. And I think what people are starting to wake up to is that they're realizing they no longer want legislators who are beholden to the pharmaceutical and private insurance industry while they enjoy prime health care and benefits. that all of us are struggling. Workers in the state of California are being asked to contribute more and more towards their premiums, and then on the back end, pay more and more on copays and deductibles, so that leads to less take-home pay. So people are feeling it in their wallets, they're feeling it all the way around, and that's why I think what's different, as Dave mentioned, is that there is a sea change. More and more people are waking up to saying they believe healthcare is a human right, they believe it should be run by the government, they no longer have confidence in the private sector, it has not shown that it is any more efficient than a government-run program like Medicare. Now, what will happen, though, and I think I will just say this, I'm going to deviate a little bit from some of my allies. I do think it is unfair to put this all on the speaker, because ultimately the Senate could have done more. The governor could have shown real initiative to say, okay, we're going to do something to tackle health care. And yes, does the speaker or has the speaker received money from the insurance industry? Yes. I wrote an op-ed that I was willing to give him and the Senate a benefit of doubt, as Dave mentioned. It's a two-year process. Allow this to really, let's use this next year to make SB 562 as robust as possible, so that it will be forced to have an up and down vote, and they can't call it woefully incomplete anymore. Let's see how sincere they are in the Senate. Let's see how sincere the Speaker is about tackling healthcare issues. And if and when at that point there's nothing in place, then I think they have no more excuses, and then we can really tie this into the amount of donations that they receive. I got into trouble a little over a year ago when I spoke at a Bernie Sanders rally, and I said that the biggest obstacle for single payer or Medicare for all in our country was not Republicans. It was the corporate Democratic, and I use an unfortunate term, which I apologize for. But some of that is true, right? We have a supermajority in the state of California. We have a governor who is supposedly Democratic, and yet we can no longer get that. And I will just say, if you go back to SB 840, Sheila Kuehl's bill, I agree that a lot of Dems voted for it because they knew Schwarzenegger would never sign it. In some respects, that's kind of what's happening in the GOP healthcare battle right now. All of those senators and congressmen who said that they were all about a repeal, they knew President Obama would always veto it so they could vote for it. Now you own all three branches of government, and you're seeing the hypocrisy on their end as well. I think in California, people are waking up, they're demanding more, and I do think that in the next year and a half, if really the legislature does not try to tackle this issue and make healthcare better in some capacity for the citizens, you are going to see this really, this movement is only getting stronger each month, each year, and I think people are going to pay a price.
Well, let me just add to that, and I agree with a lot of what Paul just said. And if that was the messaging from the top at the beginning, throughout this campaign, I wouldn't have had an argument to make in The Intercept. So, but there is a path to do exactly what Dr. Song said in terms of making this a robust bill, and it goes right through SB 840, which was just referenced with Sheila Kuehl's bill. And let me just say something about SB 840. Regardless of the political reasons for why the Democratic Party passed that, that was a real bill. That bill, Sheila Kuehl is a very experienced and intelligent legislator, maybe as good as it gets at the state level, and she answered virtually every question you would have when you're trying to set up a government-run single-payer system through a state government like California. She encompassed virtually everything, whether it was patient advocacy, whether it was getting more money so that we'd have more personnel, because if you have everybody covered, there's probably going to be more utilization of healthcare. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that? So there were inducements to increase health personnel within the state of California in that bill. There was, you name it, and it was in that bill. And yet, when we're at a time now where we actually have this sea change happening and more attention and interest in a better healthcare system, all of that gets stripped away. And there was no reason for that. You could update the bill simply by adding in these elements that Sheila Kuehl worked on developing for 6 years in that bill to get it to where it was. And you could do that, you know, we could start that now. Just because Speaker Rendon has shelved the bill within the Assembly doesn't mean that the Senate can't continue its work, doesn't mean that people are unable to speak about the health care system that we want to have. All of this work can be done right now, and so just because there's this one roadblock at this one part of the process doesn't mean that you can't move forward, and you know, that's kind of why I think that this process was maybe less serious than it needed to be at this time, when you do see the public moving toward this opinion that the government has a significant role to play in guaranteeing health care for everyone.
And where does it go from here, David Diane? I mean, what are you hearing from activists on the ground about the approach they're planning to take from here on out?
I mean, that's a good question. I wish the Nurses Association would come on the show and tell us. There needs to be an effort. This thing is not dead, number one. Number two, we're in a situation where more people are interested in getting to this type of system. So what is the legislative strategy? The strategy, in my view, could be with, asking for a select committee so that members of the legislature and people who are experts who support this concept can go around the state with field hearings and put together the kind of substantive bill that needs to be done to force the hand of legislators. The Senate could work on its own bill through the gut and amend process to add in all of these other features. We could get clarity on whether you truly need to go to the ballot. I believe you do. The Nurses Association keeps saying that's an assumption and not a fact. Well, they can prove it.
And just quickly, sorry to cut you off, David, we only have about 30 seconds. Dr. Song, what are you hearing from your allies? What's next?
Well, I think one is they're going to show, unlike SB 810, which was Mark Leno's bill, where you had six Democrats either vote no or abstain, and it fell two votes short, never made it out of the Senate, there was really very little backlash. I think what's going to be different this time around is you see a sustained group of people, a movement that has really crossed all generations, all races, all economic boundaries, of people coming together and demanding more. So I think you're going to see in the next several months to the next year a much more sustained outrage and movement. And that's what we have to do, is we have to show, as David mentioned, a people power to offset the corporate lobbyists that are basically controlling Sacramento. If you see people coming day to day, calling your office, flooding your office, coming to you with letters, emails, calls, you start paying attention that maybe this is important to your constituents. And I think that's what's really changing, and that's what's going to take.
Dr. Paul Song is a board-certified radiation oncologist and co-chair of the Campaign for a Healthy California. Independent journalist David Diane wrote a piece about single payer for The Intercept. Find it at yourcallradio.org. We did invite the California nurses to join us, but they declined our invitation. You can find more information about single payer at yourcallradio.org. Dr. Song and David Diane, thank you for joining us.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And thank you for joining us. It's Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar.